tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
All right. So let me introduce you to our presenters today. They are, of course, amazing. We're so lucky that they partner with us. Susan Richmond is the Executive Director of Neighborhood Cats, having served in that role since 2010. She oversees hands-on TNR programs in New York City and New Jersey City and on the island of Maui, as well as using her prior Madison Avenue advertising experience to write, among other things, crowdfunding appeals to help the many sick and injured cats who come Neighborhood Cats' way. One of her favorite projects currently is a veterinary scholarship program designed to train community cat-oriented vets in high-volume spay-neuter techniques. When she's not in the office, you can find Susie out in the fields of Maui, where she recently passed the 1,000 cat trapped mark, which is amazing. And Brian Cordes, who you'll be hearing from, serves as Neighborhood Cats National Programs Director and Susie Richmond's husband. Back in 1999, while working in Manhattan as both an attorney and a video director, Brian co-founded Neighborhood Cats after TNRing a colony near where he lived. Except for a six-year stint as a grants manager for PetSmart Charities, Brian has been with the organization ever since. He has authored and co-authored handbooks on grassroots TNR, community TNR, the Return to Field programs, and you can always find him online where he regularly presents both basic and advanced webinars on all things TNR in partnership with the Community Cats Podcast, and we are grateful to have him. And I do hear your microphone is on, so Brian, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you so much, Kristen, and thanks everybody for taking time out today to learn about this innovative program. So I want to point out that today is part of a three-part webinar series that we have with the Community Cats Podcast about doing trap, neuter, return on a community level. We also have a series of webinars on the hands-on stuff, drop traps and trapping tips and tricks and caretaking tips and tricks. But this is specifically for people who are interested in it on a program level. And this is the third in the series. The first two were grassroots, how to get the public involved in doing TNR. That's from the backyard to the front page. And then we did targeted TNR. And those have both been recorded and are available on the Community Cats Podcast website. And today we're doing the third in the series, which is Return to Field. And anything we talk about today that you want to take a deeper dive in, Neighborhood Cats, in partnership with the Humane Society of the United States and Alley Cat Advocates, which is a TNR organization in Louisville, Kentucky, have authored the Return to Field Handbook, which you can download for free. Or if you'd like to have a print copy, you can purchase that. Everything we're going to talk about today, again, if you want to take a deeper dive, you'll find it in this handbook. I want to just clarify some terminology before we get started. So you'll often hear me refer to community cats. And what is a community cat? Well, really, that's any cat that's free roaming and not owned in the traditional sense. It's important to understand that their socialization level can range from one extreme, which is very friendly, to the other extreme, which is very feral and unsocialized, and then everything in between. So you can be a community cat, whether you're a cat that can be picked up and held in someone's lap, or a cat that won't come within 20 feet of someone. These cats are often part of what we refer to as colonies, and a colony is a group of cats, doesn't matter the number, who share a common food source and a common territory. So just so we know what we're talking about when we use these terms. So what is Return to Field? Just a real short description is, as depicted in this diagram, starting on the upper left, a free-roaming cat is trapped, could be by a private citizen, an animal control officer, or really anyone else, is brought to the local shelter and impounded. If the shelter decides that the cat is eligible for a return to field, the cat is then spayed or neutered, vaccinated and ear-tipped. After recovery from surgery, which is typically overnight, he or she is then returned back to the location of the trapping. Now, identification of the feeder or the caretaker is not usually required. And we'll be discussing later at length which cats are eligible for this program. But that's the basic idea, is you have a free roaming cat who's there on Main Street. Typically, a private citizen catches the cat, surrenders them at the shelter. The shelter decides the cat is eligible, does a spay or neuter surgery, and then returns the cat right back to where he was trapped. And you can see the only difference is now Kitty is ear tipped. So the question always comes up, what is the difference between return to field, or RTF for short, versus TNR, or trap neuter return? Because they both involve free roaming cats, typically community cats. They both involve the cat being trapped and then spayed or neutered and then returned back to the original location. So the key distinction has to do with the fact that in return to field, the cat is impounded at the local shelter. So the shelter at that point, having intaked the cat, gains legal custody and is the entity that determines the outcome. So is this cat going to be put up for adoption? Is he going to be returned back into the field? It's up to the shelter to decide this. So as I mentioned, the typical scenario is a private citizen traps the cat and then surrenders the cat to the shelter, who then makes the decision whether or not to return the cat back to his original territory. In contrast with trap neuter return, the cat is not impounded at the local shelter. So the shelter does not take legal custody and is not the one that decides what's going to happen. Your typical scenario is that a caretaker or somebody assisting the caretaker traps the cat and brings the cat to a spay-neuter clinic. After the cat is fixed, the caretaker returns the cat back to the original territory. So the point is that return to field is a shelter-based program, that it's the shelter who's making the decisions about what's going to happen. That's the big difference. So where did return to field originate? It's an interesting story. So back in 2008 in Jacksonville, First Coast No More Homeless Pets, which is a high volume spay neuter clinic based in Jacksonville, the president at that time, Rick Ducharme, he actually attended a workshop that I was giving, and I suggested that in order to start to begin cooperating with the local open admission shelter, that a good first step is to ask them to let you know when ear-tipped cats have come in so that you can then try to return them back to their colonies. So he met with the head of the Animal Care and Protective Services and made that request. Well, much to his surprise, the director, who at the time was an interim director and an engineer by trade, not somebody with animal welfare background, he came back and he said, not only will I give you the ear-tipped cats, I'll give you all the cats, all the community cats that come in. And then you can return them after any that are not ear-tipped are spayed and neutered. And Rick, being Rick, you know, was up for the challenge, and he found funding, a lot of it from Best Friends Animal Society. And in about August of 2008, they began this program where any community cats that came into the shelter were transferred over to the spay-neuter clinic, who then fixed them and transported them back to their original locations and released them. So here are the results of that program, the first several years of it. The blue is intake, and the red is euthanasia. The green bar are the number of RTF cats. So you can see that in 2007, almost close to 14,000, between 13,000 and 14,000 cats came into the Jacksonville Animal Care and Protective Services shelter. Of those, about 13,000, over 11,000 of them were euthanized. So that's staggering numbers and not particularly good ones. Now in 2008, like I say, in August, the Return to Field program began, and you can see how euthanasia started to drop, and it dropped by approximately the number of cats who were returned to field, which makes perfect sense, right? These are cats that otherwise would have been euthanized at that time. So instead, they got a live release. The next year, even more dramatic, more RTF cats and more dramatic drops in euthanasia. And that continued on up until the time that I have figures for, to you get to 2014, and you have maybe approximately 500 cats were euthanized. So because of this program, the number of cats being euthanized went from over 11,000 to about 500 a year. Also, you can see how intake dropped as well. It's a little bit speculative about why that happened. My theory is that the shelter, by practicing spay, neuter, and return of community cats, made that the model for how the community as a whole should deal with these cats. And the volume of TNR that was happening in the community independent of the shelter also went up quite a bit during that period of time. And more cats being spay, neutered, you know, again, I'm theorizing, may have resulted in fewer kittens and just fewer cats to be brought to the shelter in the first place. But anyway, key driver in return to field programs is the red bar, which is euthanasia. And you can see what a dramatic effect this had. So what are the benefits when we step back and we look at return to field programs, which since Jacksonville have become more and more the norm for shelters? We don't have exact numbers on how many shelters are doing return to field now, but it's a lot. I don't know if it's a majority yet, but it's becoming more and more the way to go. So obviously you have lower euthanasia, since most of the vast majority of these cats that are being returned to field would not have a live outcome otherwise. So this frees up a lot of resources for the shelter. Instead of spending money killing cats, they can spend money on spay neuter or whatever they want, dog behavior programs, whatever it is. It frees up resources. The shelter itself becomes a healthier environment for the animals because they're not as crowded. Also, public support. So fair or unfair, the public tends to support animal shelters that have live outcomes as the, you know, vast majority of their animals. And they tend to stay away from shelters where there's high kill rates. So as live release rates rise, so does fundraising. More people come to the shelter, more adoptions happen. There's also culture change inside and outside the shelter. I mentioned how in Jacksonville, the shelter became a leader in teaching the community what's the proper way to deal with community cats. And it's not to just drop them off and have them disappear, but it's to spay and neuter them. And that starts to have an influence on cats that never touch the shelter. But also inside the shelter, there can be just remarkable transformations. I'll give you an example in Albuquerque, where euthanasia was the predominant outcome for most community cats once they were impounded. When they started doing a return to field program, the lead veterinary technician, who for years had been the one to administer the euthanasia drugs, she asked if she could come and observe one of the very first releases of a feral cat that was done. And so, of course, they said yes, and she came along. And when they let the cat out of the trap and he or she went running off, the tech burst into tears. And she was just so happy to see this change happening. So it can be a huge, huge morale booster. People don't get into animal work generally because they like to see animals dying. There's a lot of research that shows that staff in high kill shelters, where a lot of healthy animals are being put down, suffer from much higher than normal issues with mental health. So suicide rates, drug addiction, post-traumatic stress, a lot of turnover. And once predominant outcome is life instead of death, that starts to change. Also, with a return to field program, you know, we don't like to talk about this too much, but, you know, high kill shelters are probably with community cats. A lot of those community cats are probably someone's pet who was roaming. And now they don't have any identification, and the owner's not coming to the shelter looking for the pet in time, if at all, and they end up being euthanized. So if you're returning cats back to where they were, you're not going to be doing that. So why stop euthanizing? And Because that's usually what happens when there isn't, when there's a high volume of community cats entering a shelter and there is not a return to field program. Well, historically, shelters with very high euthanasia rates, over, if you look at their data over time, you usually don't see any improvement in intake and euthanasia rates. They either level off or they may rise. Complaint calls don't go down. Whatever amount of predation on wildlife may be happening in the community doesn't go down. And the number of community cats out on the landscape doesn't seem to go down either, because they just keep coming in the same or rising numbers. There's also a lot of costs. I mentioned the high stress and the high turnover and the poor public relations and also lower adoptions. Again, this is all borne out by quite a bit of historical data. So it's important to understand, if you're trying to wrap your head around why is it better to let the cat go, it's important to understand why lethal control fails. You know, why after decades of euthanizing community cats, do we still have a population problem? There's many reasons, but here's some of the most important ones. So at least at this stage, in communities that are suffering from cat overpopulation, there's usually way too many cats and too few animal control resources, you know, getting a handle on it. And for those of you who've done trapping, who encountered a colony of 15 or 20 cats, you know how much work it is to get all of them and get them spayed and neutered and taken care of and then put them back out. And animal control officers have a lot of other responsibilities too, and they don't have that kind of time. So they don't trap in the way that somebody, a caretaker doing TNR would do. They won't know how many cats there are in the first place at a location. The feeder may be hostile. They'll put out five traps, and whoever they catch, they round up at the end of the day and they bring them back, and it's the job done until the next complaint comes in. So it's not a very efficient or effective way from a population control point of view of accomplishing much of anything. I mentioned caretaker resistance. People who feed the cats and care for them are typically very bonded to the cats, and they're not okay with them being taken away usually. There's the vacuum effect, which I'll discuss more in a moment. And then there's the failure to capture all the members in a colony. So if you capture just a few of them and the rest of them remain and they're intact, well, they're just going to continue to reproduce. From a population point of view, you'll have accomplished nothing. But I'm sure a lot of you have heard this term, vacuum effect. And sometimes terminology becomes so prevalent that we don't really understand what's behind the term. We just say, oh, vacuum effect, without really knowing how it works. So let me give you a very quick example. So this is a colony of cats, say 10 cats at this grocery store, and they're eating out of the dumpster. So there's enough food put out by the grocery store every day to feed 10 cats. And that's why there's 10 cats and not 20 or 30. So sometimes you hear people say, like, oh, if you don't fix those 10 cats in 3 years, there's going to be, you know, 720,000 of them. That's not what happens. There's a thing called the carrying capacity of an environment, and that's how many cats can that location support. And that has to do with, well, how much food is available and what kind of shelter is available. And when we're talking about a dumpster at a grocery store, there's only enough food there for 10 cats. So once the population gets above 10, nature takes over, and some of the cats will migrate to find new food sources. Disease will set in. Tomcats may kill kittens. Whatever it may be, nature will make sure that the number of cats there pretty much approximates the amount of food that is available. So you have 10 cats, and somebody decides, all right, you know, we're going to take them away. We're going to euthanize them. They're all feral. They're unadoptable. So we're left with this situation in the immediate aftermath of the trapping. So what's the problem, right? Problem solved, no more cats, all taken care of, we don't need RTF. What is the problem? Why isn't this working? There is still a food source. This is the vacuum. There's no cats, but there's enough food for 10 cats, right? And is this grocery store off by an island by itself where there's nothing else and no one else lives there? Well, of course not. The grocery store is in the middle of neighborhoods, and these neighborhoods have their own colonies of community cats, and they're not altered. So they're reaching their carrying capacity, and eventually they're going to be looking for new food sources. And lo and behold, there's the grocery store with its dumpster that nobody's taking advantage of in the cat world. So it's not usually very long. In fact, it can happen very quickly that a couple of cats show up, Adam and Eve, and they look around and they say, plenty of food, no competition. Let's hang out. Let's stay here and raise a family. And in one or two breeding cycles, you're right back up to 10 cats. And this is the vacuum effect and why trying to eradicate cat populations has been a historical failure. And the only success, if you want to call it success, the only times cats have been successfully eradicated on a very large, on a large scale, has been on remote islands with intensive amount of work and intensive amount of resources over the course of many, many years. So in a urban, crowded, resource-challenged environment, it's just not a successful strategy.
Do you need TNR resources to share on demand? We've got you covered. Check out our Everything TNR playlist, available now on the Community Cats Podcast YouTube channel. This comprehensive playlist includes all of our free webinars presented in partnership with Neighborhood Cats. Topics include tips for trappers and colony caregivers, best practices for targeted TNR, return to field programs, and much more. There's something for everyone who wants to help outdoor cats and kittens. Free to stream anytime. Just visit www.communitycats.com/TNR-playlist.
Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable health care for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta, and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines, to specialized and innovative treatments like full-mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases, they've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trichem on Highway 92 at Trichem Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More purr, less price.
Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now.
If you want to catalog all your cat sightings to manage your colonies easier, then Whisker Tracker is from you. It's a free mobile app that lets you create cat profiles, see your cats on a map, and track the health and status of all your cats. Download the Whisker Tracker mobile app today.
So we're going to return the cats instead, right? We're going to fix them. We're going to put them back. And the first question people ask, or the first fear that they have, is everybody's going to freak out, right? All of a sudden, the people who've been dropping cats off at your shelter and thinking job's done, now you're telling them, nope, you know, kitty's coming right back to your backyard. They're all going to get really angry and upset and all that, right? So it's a reasonable fear for you to have that the community may act maybe up in arms. And it's important to test this, to look at the data, to look at the research, and not assume that that's the reaction that's going to happen. So let's do that. So this was a survey that was commissioned by Alley Cat Allies in 2007. And although these surveys were commissioned by animal welfare groups, they were conducted by professional polling organizations in order, so there's not any bias in the data. So it's not Alley Cat Allies that asked the questions. They just hired, like, I think it was Harris Polling or something, you know, one of these professional organizations to do these. And in this particular case, the question, as you can see, was, you know, if you saw a stray cat in your community and you had to choose between either leaving the cat where the cat is or catching the cat and having the cat euthanized, what do you consider to be more humane, right? And here's the results. So 81% said, leave the cat alone. And only 14% preferred that the cat be put down. So that's really eye-opening, right? That most of the public, 4/5 in this case, prefers a live outcome and would rather the cat just stay in the environment. Now, a little bit later on in 2014, Best Friends Animal Society did a variation off of this and added a third option, which was, you know, leave the cat where they are, have the cat impounded with and being specific that the cat would be euthanized. Or the third option was A here, which is basically TNR, you know, sterilize the cat and have the cat returned. So they had three options to choose from now. And here's the results. And you can see that, again, the vast majority preferred a live outcome. So you've got 68% preferred TNR and 8% who said, well, do nothing, just leave them where they are. So that's 3/4 of the respondents adding up to 76%, which is very similar to that 81% we saw in the Alley Cat Allies survey, who wanted a live outcome. And it's the minority who wanted the cats to be rounded up and, if necessary, euthanized if there was no other options. This is a survey that was done in 2008 of Ohio adults, and it just has some interesting data about how prevalent cat feeding is in our country and in the United States. So 43% of participants had seen, so almost half of the adults that were surveyed had seen free roaming cats in their neighborhoods on a regular basis, either daily or weekly. 26% had fed a free roaming cat during the prior year. So that's one out of four Ohio adults had put out food for a free roaming cat within the past year. So that's a lot of feeding that's going on. Interestingly, of the people who were feeding free roaming cats, only 1/4 of them had ever brought a cat to the veterinarian. So that's where the challenge lies. You've got 26% of respondents feeding, but then only maybe 6 or 7% who were taking the next step and making sure the cats were not reproducing or were getting proper medical care. But the point being that there's an awful lot of us out there who are feeding cats. The conclusion I think you can draw from this data is that return to field, where you're doing spay neuter and then you're returning the cat into the environment, that's the outcome and the program that's aligned with the majority, the silent majority, who favor live outcomes and they're okay with community cats. Euthanasia is aligned with the what turns out to be the minority of the public who complain about the cats and just want them removed. And it's important to, if you're working in a shelter or you're involved in animal control in some manner, this may seem very not instinctive at all to you, because that's not what you're hearing, right? When you're getting, when you're fielding calls at the call center, you're not getting people calling up and saying, I think it's great that there are these cats in my backyard and wandering the neighborhood, and I just want to call you up and thank you for leaving them alone and letting them be. And by the way, can you fix them? You're not getting those calls. The calls you're getting are, my backyard smells, I can't sleep, you know, we don't want these cats around, I can't use, you know, I don't like to poop in my backyard. But you're getting all the complaints. And so if you're just going by what your direct experiences at the shelter, you're going to think most of the community hates the cats, right? And that they're going to freak out if you start putting them back. And that's not actually the reality. So what are some of the common fears that people in our field, animal welfare, tend to have when they're contemplating doing a RTF program? One fear is that people are going to hurt the cats, right? Like a lot of people are surrendering these cats at the shelter because they don't want them, right? They don't want them around. They may not like cats, they're, for whatever reason. And one of the things you'll find if you do one of these programs is there's a variety of reasons. And for sure, some people are surrendering the cats because they don't want them and they don't like them. You'll find a lot of people are surrendering the cats because they do like them and they want to help them and they don't know how best to go about doing that. So there's a whole variety of motivations. But the concern is that if somebody who dislikes the cats brings them in and then sees the cat back, they're going to feel like their only alternative is to harm the cats. And there is no data to support that as being true. There's no data that shows a correlation between return to field and increased cruelty. That's really important to understand. There, to the extent there's been research on this, it's been anecdotal, so it's hard to say that, to rule it out and say, nah, it doesn't happen. It's just never been shown. In the Jacksonville program, they microchipped the first 6,000 cats in order to see if they could find any kind of correlation between finding more of these cats dead on the road or involved in abuse situations. And they didn't find anything. And they stopped using microchips, which at the time were more expensive than they are today, so they could put the resources into more spay-neuter. So they didn't find any noticeable increase in animal abuse cases. I know the shelter that Susie and I worked with on a return to field program here in Maui, the Maui Humane Society, after a couple of years, they didn't see anything in their data either to suggest that there was more reports of cruelty or cases that they were finding or anything like that. So it's important to know there's no data to support that fear. Okay, so how about the fear that people are going to complain? They're going to call up the city councilman or the mayor and they're going to start bad-mouthing you. Some of them will. I mean, that's just reality. You have to, you're changing the paradigm for years and years. Anybody who didn't like a cat in the backyard, all they had to do was trap the cat, drop them off, taken care of. Didn't much matter to them whether a new cat showed up in 3 months, because then they would just trap that cat and bring him to the shelter too. And when you think about it, who's bearing the costs of all this besides the animals with their lives? But the financial costs, they're all being borne by the shelter. Once the person buys a trap or borrows a trap, that's it as far as their investment goes, or maybe the gas it takes to drive over to the shelter. In terms of housing the cat, euthanizing, disposing of the body, all of these things are costs that are borne by the shelter. So now all of a sudden you're taking this away and you're not the community's dumping ground for cats. And the people who like that aren't going to be happy about it and they're going to complain. And the way you best deal with that, in my opinion, is when you're starting your program, go to your local officials. Don't ask them for permission necessarily unless you have to. But just inform them. Just say, hey, this is what we're doing, and this is why we're doing it. We've been euthanizing cats for years. We have the same amount of cats coming into the shelter every year. It's not working. It's costing us a ton. And this, we're going to switch to return to field, and this is why. And be prepared that some people aren't going to like it, and they're going to call you up and complain. And you've basically inoculated them. Now, hopefully they agree with you. But if they don't, it's not going to be a shock when all of a sudden somebody calls up and starts complaining about the shelter and the program that they're doing. And you'll avoid that you know, frantic phone call from your local councilman, like, what are you doing? So anticipate this could happen. But also be aware, you know, there'll be the majority of people are going to like this. And they may not be calling up and writing letters saying what a great program it is. But again, we go back to our research and we see that most of the public prefers live outcomes. Now, one thing I would add too is talk to your rescuers. Okay, that's a big mistake I've seen a lot of shelters make, which is they don't communicate with the local rescue community. And that could be smaller or larger, right? Depending on your service area, you may have some very substantial groups, or you may have a collection of individuals or some mixture of the two. They also may not be comfortable, you know, with the idea of cats going back outside for whatever philosophical reasons they have. So it's important to bring them into the conversation and explain what you're doing and why you're doing it, or you're going to risk them misunderstanding what you're doing and raising hell about it when you're further down the road. And then you start to have battle lines and divisions within the animal welfare community, and that's never a good thing. So not going to convince everybody. Everybody's not going to agree with you. Do take the time to make sure everybody understands, whether they agree or not, what you're doing and why. So there's also a fear that, you know, with return to field programs, as I'll explain later, you want to turn the cats around as quickly as possible. You want to get them in and out of the shelter, preferably within, you know, 24 to 48 hours, if you can manage that. So the fear is, well, then somebody who loses their cat isn't going to get a chance to reclaim. You know, the cat will be in and out of the shelter before they even know that Fluffy's missing, right? Well, that's true, but the fact is that I'm not sure if it's still exactly 2%, but the national reclaim average for cats is extremely low. It's definitely under 10%, and the last time I checked, it was only 2%. If the cat is returned to their territory, so maybe they were wandering around and the neighbor doesn't like cats, trapped them and brought them in, and there's no microchip or collar or anything like that. Well, if the shelter arranges for the cat to be returned close to where the cat was trapped, well, Fluffy's going to find his own way home. And the chance of that happening versus the owner coming to the shelter and looking for the cat is, it's much higher with return to field. So you're going to get much more reunifications and lost cats going home, or they're not really lost, than you will without a return to field program. See, we have a few minutes before we take a break. So Kristen, we could take a few questions right now about just the policy side of this, maybe, you know, like five minutes or so.
Okay. There is a great question here on policy. I'm going to read it verbatim because it's probably going to be easier to get the details in there. RTF is not an option in my area, which is Raleigh, North Carolina. All the shelters and all the rescues are full, and the municipal shelter is euthanizing for the first time in 8 years. The shelters and rescues, I guess, are declining the help, and they won't put people on a waiting list. And of course, people who are for RTF are very frustrated. The city doesn't recognize community cats. If you feed the cats, you own them, and you're required to keep them on a leash or in a carrier so they can go after people who are just feeding. Raleigh doesn't illegally allow for TNR, RTF of cats within the city limits. So put on your lawyer cap and let's discuss this.
Well, you've got a whole new topic. And we did a presentation at this year's 2024's online cat conference hosted by the Community Cats Podcast. And I did a full presentation on how to persuade municipal officials to go with trap, neuter, return. And so I would highly recommend, I believe those recordings are available. They're for sale, I believe.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. And if you need help in terms of the finances, contact us at Neighborhood Cats. We have some scholarships available. But so step number one would be watch that presentation. Okay. I go step by step over how do you make the case? What kind of data do you use? Who do you talk to? And various strategies. Because what you're talking about is you're not at a place in that community where you can talk about return to field programs because there's no building blocks, there's no foundation. So the very first step, it's like we tell people when they're doing a trap, neuter, return project just in their neighborhood, the first step isn't to trap. The first step is to talk to the community, is to build support, to get people to understand what you're doing And you have to think about doing that on a larger scale, on a municipal scale. And advocacy is really the first step of any kind of trap near return or community cap program that you're going to have there. So I can't really quickly teach you how to be an effective advocate, but I can in about 50 minutes. Watch that webinar. If you can't afford the fee, then write to us at info@neighborhoodcats.org or communitycatspodcast.com, and we'll make sure you get a chance to see it.
Yeah, advocacy is really tough. It's easy to get frustrated quickly. If you were to give somebody one piece of advice to start their advocacy outside of watching the video, what would you say would be the first thing they got to do?
I think the key to success in being what I would call a TNR advocate is really understanding that nothing else works. There's no other method available if you want to control the cat population besides sterilization. That's the only chance you have at success. So as an advocate, you need to understand really well why that is. You know, understand the concept of carrying capacity, understand why all the challenges to using euthanasia as a matter of cat control. And then once you really understand it, you want to go back and you want to get the data that supports that. So you need, how's intake in the Raleigh community? What's the trend over the last 10 years? Has it ever gone down, or does it keep going up or staying the same, which would indicate there's no effect of what they're doing on the cat population? How about the number of complaints? You need to demonstrate that what's been going on and has been ineffective and all the money being spent on it is waste, and then explain why this method has at least a chance of success. And there are plenty of documented cases of it having succeeded. And then if you can't get the whole enchilada at once, then you propose a pilot project that you carefully select and ensure that it's a success. And then you demonstrate to the frightened community that this isn't a horrible thing and that people like it and it's successful, and you build from there. That's it in a nutshell.
Yep. Little bites rather than trying to choke down the whole thing is a real good piece of advice to start that. I think also maybe understanding what's going to sway the opinions of the people you're trying to convince, like the city councilors probably don't care about the kids.
I always read their bios and look for the ones that have cats. And
yes, and also talk about the money because they are really interested in what's going to save them money. So
there are advantages to trap, neuter, return. And basically, one of the things I would recommend as an advocate is don't say TNR that much. I mean, I do it among ourselves, but you should be talking about spay, neuter. Talk about sterilization. Those are words that are going to be more easily understood. And what all the benefits are, and understand that municipal officials have more concerns than the number of cats. They're more concerned about the people. That's their job. So they're concerned about public health. They're concerned about nuisance complaints. So if you can demonstrate, and the literature is out there, that you can lower the number of cats and thereby reduce the number of complaints, or just spay neuter itself will reduce, and they're going to get less calls, that's what they care about. I found that municipal officials care more about complaints than they do about intake to the shelter or numbers or things like that. They care about intake to the shelter if they're paying for it. If each cat coming in costs them, then they want there to be fewer. So and again, we go over all of that in that presentation.
We're very excited that you're going to be doing that presentation too next year as part of the regular series. So that's super, super exciting.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.